It will ever be impossible for the finite to grasp the infinite, but it is possible to help one another, and find, in so doing, something that gives us courage. Chapter 10 Spirit Occupations. Again we come to a practical question, the occupation of the countless so-called dead, their daily life, and the method adopted to reach a higher development. If there be occupation, what is the average citizen qualified to do? And, in this connection, we must here consider qualifications. It is a fact to be noted from experience that it requires years of study and close application to do anything, except hand labor, well. One who aspires to the law must now have a fairly good education, if not that of a college graduate. Then he must enter upon 4 years of study, followed by years of practice, before he is qualified to do good work. It is the same with a physician, and all other professions. High position is gained by years of labor. Only when fitted is one entrusted with responsibilities, and the ambitious work long and hard to qualify themselves for the positions they would occupy. This is just and proper. Childhood is taught, youth studies, and manhood labors to qualify for the highest place which in life they may be called upon to occupy. It is a fact to be regretted that in most instances high positions are sought for the purpose of acquiring money, and the largest amount of money possible. Worldly ambitions and desires relate almost wholly to physical things. It may be said that the development of mankind, and it has been splendid, has been along physical lines, and the question may be asked, how are men qualified to take up work, and what is the character of work in the afterlife, if there is work? Before taking up that question, let us remember that nothing physical passes into the spirit world. All the money and property acquired is, as we know, divided among earth people entitled thereto, and usually it is spent with all convenient speed. Litigation pertains to property, and, there being no physical property in the afterlife, the lawyer will have no practice. The physician and surgeon will have no occupation, for the reason that the physical bodies on which they practice are not there. The only ills are mental. Scientists who recognize only matter having three dimensions will not at first be qualified intelligently to work with spirit material that is so high in vibration that they know little of it. Nature's great purpose contemplates that mankind in this life should first of all develop the spirit, refine the inner body in which the individual functions, and qualify by years of effort to meet the conditions of all mankind, for this life is but a preparatory school in nature's great plan. How can we acquire spiritual riches? What must one do to become so developed that he may intelligently meet the new conditions and take up the work that will be required of him? These are questions that can be answered. The answer is, play fair. In every transaction, do to others as you would have others do to you. Help those who are less fortunate. Scatter words of kindness lavishly, lend a helping hand to those in need, let the thought be clean and pure, do not teach what you do not know, do not mislead, and labor to understand all natural law. These are things and such thoughts will refine and develop self and qualify one to enter into the new conditions in the life to come, without shame and without regret. Such has been my teaching from those in spirit life. If everyone knew that here and now every act and thought was photographed in his psychic ether, and that in dissolution all became visible, some at least would hesitate. The thought that wrong can be hidden gives much courage. Thought makes character, and in the end character is visible. What have I learned of the daily life and occupation of the living dead? One long an inhabitant of the higher plane, has said. We have schools here for the development of the soul of man, and to teach him his relation to mankind, to instruct him in the wonders of creation, impart to him knowledge of the inhabitants of the numerous worlds in space, to aid man, also, in experimenting in chemistry and all other branches of science, for in this life we can explore the uttermost extent of the universe. We also instruct in political economy and laws governing humanity. We also point out conditions and means whereby to help the unprogressive and helpless portion of mankind. Another states. Again, we have more advanced schools, colleges and great universities of learning. The young, as you know, grow to maturity, and those who in earth life appear old at dissolution, having thrown off the old flesh garment, function in the fullness of maturity. There are here no old people or a young and age, as you use that word, depends on individual development. Earth people, as a rule, think that when they have passed through high school and universities, they are through with study. When they arrive here and appreciate that knowledge is the stepping stone of their progression, they attend our temples of learning in great things, where more advanced teachers instruct them. Another said, "In the spirit world, as in your world, are numerous libraries. These men and women grow intellectually. Many books are composed and written in spirit spheres, and the authors endeavor sometimes to impress their words and wisdom upon the brains of some sensitive ones upon the earth sphere. Again, a book written by one in your plane is by mental activity first created in spirit substance. It had to be before it could be clothed in physical substance by you, and we have all those books, as well as those wholly written by spirits, but none are permitted in our libraries that are not founded upon truth. It is interesting to see the vast number of spirit people thronging our libraries, studying the works of the more advanced spirits, similar to what is done in the libraries of Earth." Another said, "We have hospitals, many of them mental hospitals, where the insane, weak and mentally deficient are treated and developed, and those who understand that work labor to restore normal conditions, for dissolution does not restore disordered minds or develop mentality. There are homes to build, and homes commenced on earth to finish, and they are as different as the homes of your earth. Yours are first fashioned in our ether, then constructed out of earth material by the hand of man. Ours are made out of etheric material and fashioned and erected by and through mental or, to be more correct, spirit thought. All this, as with you, requires effort. You may hire others to build earth homes, but here each builds his own, and many are very busy doing it. You ask me to speak particularly as to the occupation of our people. It is a subject vast in extent, for our labors transcend yours, though our methods are different. While our labor is largely in the mental or spirit field of action, yet you must remember we have fields and vegetation where those versed in such work find occupation. But it is in the more advanced field of chemistry and philosophy that spirit people seek to enter, and here millions labor to understand and comprehend the laws of nature, and how to apply them. It is a busy world and no drones are found, except in the earthbound or lowest of the spirit spheres." Concerning different avocations, this one said, "I am here in this way to try to tell you of some of the conditions of our world. Here we have different avocations assigned to us, according to our needs and desires. Some engage in teaching and training the intellect of those who needn't desire such training. Some with great love of children find ample opportunity for the use and enjoyment of this attribute of their natures in the kindergartens for the many thousands of children continually arriving on these shores. Some are most happy in endeavoring to assist the friends of Earth into higher and better conditions and in counteracting the abnormal influences of undeveloped and misdirected spirits over the minds of mortals. So it is that there is work of benevolence and philanthropy for all who are prepared for such work. The exercise of active philoprogenitiveness furnishes the same delightful enjoyments to the soul over here as with you, and greater, for here we more clearly discern the far-reaching consequences of our endeavors to do good to whomsoever is in need of assistance." Another said, "Let me speak of the music here, of those harmonious vibrations that touch the soul, that universal appeal that is understood by all races, regardless of the languages they speak. The music of your world is crude, indeed, compared to celestial compositions and songs. Here we have harmonious vibrations, expressed in what is called music. It elevates the soul, and we devote much time to its cultivation and to instruments for its expression. It is all vibration. Many are occupied in this work. It is only now and then that our songs and our music are impressed on Earth's sensations. We do not devote so much time to spirit matter as you do to physical matter. With you it dominates your thought. With us, matter is secondary, and spirit development dominates. It is so much more vital. The coming of infants unborn, babies and children, requires the attention of many. Those women who never in earth life knew the joys of motherhood, find it here and do that work. While some care for these little ones, others teach them. Again, one said. In the lower spheres, when those who are held there realize that the only way to improve their condition is by helping others, and have a genuine desire to help, the way is shown. This question of spirit occupation is too great for special treatment. Occupation varies and is as diversified as the thoughts of men. But this you should know, there is work and a place for each new spirit. The pity of their poverty. Few have made any effort to find out what nature requires of them here, few ever gave the subject a single thought, and so they come, one by one, but withal a great crowd every hour, and only now and then we find a spirit that can take up and do good work. The others have to be taught, even as little children are taught the simplest things. Another said, those who have led clean, fine lives, and have enriched the world, come here and, without a break, take up their work and go on. I could write a volume on the occupations of those who have preceded us, but enough has been said to impress mankind that the afterlife is real, and that there we work to develop the spirit, just as here we labor to develop and adorn the physical, while the spirit hungers and development is stayed. What position will the average individual occupy when he enters the new life? What position has he qualified himself to fill intelligently? Stripped of all earthly possessions, money, goods and chattels gone, he has nothing left but the spirit clothed with kindly acts that have enriched his soul. If he has made the world happier and better, he goes radiant and glorious. Ideals are like stars. We shall not succeed in touching them with our hands, but, like the traveler in the desert, we take them as our guides. Should not the young be impressed with the fact that the ideal life is one that has enriched itself spiritually, and that material wealth is in all cases a secondary consideration? Again, one, describing conditions in the great beyond, says, the realities of the spirit world are beyond description. I might spend hours telling you of it and not reach your minds with any conception of its glory, its greatness, its grandeur. It is so vast in extent, so marvelous, that any attempt to give you more than a faint idea would be futile. Not until you get here and see for yourself can you have any conception of the home of the soul. We have our mission to try to get knowledge through to the shoreline of your earth. We are working our best to enlighten the world and prepare its people for the death change. It is our business to instruct those who need help, the same here as with you. Many thousands of your people cannot even read, and reach us with so limited mental development as to need all our energies in their advancement out of ignorance, wrong education and false religious teachings. Few on your earth have any idea of the changes that take place along the lifeline. As they come, we gather and instruct them as you do in your schools, especially in your night schools, where the ignorant seek enlightenment. I am impressed with the fact that very many of those called learned will realize at the end that they are among those that need teachers, and will find it necessary to attend night school in this spirit world. Chapter 11 Poverty in the Afterlife. One who attempts to change or modify the thoughts, ambitions and desires of mankind, is undertaking a great task. The American people, more than any other, are taught from infancy that the desired goal is wealth, material wealth, and, such is the prodigality of the times, money is necessary for the base that is set. Money, the ring and shine of gold, becomes alluring, and the ambition of each is for its accumulation. The length to which some go, and the things that some do to possess themselves of it, stagger the mind, at least of those who have a clearer vision. It is right and very proper to provide for those dependent, in a suitable manner. But, we owe it to ourselves to provide for and enrich ourselves, both here and hereafter. Some few gather spiritual wealth that enriches beyond this earth life, the many go out into the great beyond paupers. I am impressed to urge the importance of so living and doing that when we leave this world and also leave the material wealth that we have gathered with such great effort, we may possess a spiritual wealth of vastly more importance than stock and bonds and physical properties. This involves an awakening, a change of ideals, modified ambitions, new thoughts, new hopes, and new desires. This spiritual wealth that becomes ours for all time, and enriches us in the great beyond, is accumulated without great effort. It is gathered simply by being fair in all our dealings, just to all men, and by helping those less fortunate than ourselves. This does not necessarily contemplate the expenditure of money, for a kind thought, a generous act, a little sympathy, an encouraging word, sets in motion vibrations in and about us that become a very part of us, refine our natures, spiritualize our souls, and better our conditions both here and hereafter. We enrich ourselves by helping others, not by cheating or taking advantage of those with whom we have dealings. When we are unfair in a transaction, get the best of another and obtain his property, while we may do so without violating any civil law, we gain no profit, for in the end the wrong must be undone and the property returned. There is a law, taught in the dawn of civilization, that transcends the rules of modern times. It is, do unto others what we would have them do unto us. And eternal justice requires compensation for violation of this great law. If we build about us crude conditions, we must expect to enter into the environment which our acts and thoughts have created. This is fair, this is justice. I do not speak from a religious standpoint. This work has nothing to do with religion of any kind. I am writing about facts and conditions, here and beyond, as I have come to know them. They are interwoven now and always have been and ever will be. Every act that we do is known here, and is visible and lives there, for we take them with us. Take an inventory, look the situation over squarely and fairly. What have you done that will provide food, raiment and home in the afterlife? How have you developed? The idea that here and now we can and should do and provide all those things has not been well impressed on the human mind. Would it not be the part of wisdom to give this subject a little thought, give half as much to the accumulation of spiritual as you do to material wealth, and so make happier and richer those who are now in the hereafter and ourselves and others here? Let me quote directly from one in the next life, who has given this subject thought and who speaks from experience. This statement should create a profound impression on all thinking men and women. It is from one who actually lives and labors in that place we call the afterlife. The majority of people are so intent on things material that those of a spiritual nature are either thrust into the background or forgotten altogether. This is a deplorable state of things and one which we earnestly desire to remedy. The mere struggle to live and provide themselves and their dependents with what they consider the necessities of life, engages many folks' attention to the exclusion of everything else. They just battle on from day to day because they must, or else become a burden to others. Such endeavor in their case is right and necessary and, if it is carried on in a brave and hopeful spirit, it is greatly to be admired. At the same time they would be greatly helped, and their burdens lightened considerably, if they would take time from their incessant struggle after material things to store up for themselves treasures of a spiritual nature. Wealth of this kind is of inestimable value and well worth a little trouble to procure. Unlike earthly riches, it makes life on the earth easier and pleasanter for its possessor and his associates, and ensures for him a happy and useful time when his earthly life ends and his spiritual existence begins. One who has given all or nearly all of his time and thought to material things has so much to learn on arriving here, that it is a comparatively long time before he begins to find himself sufficiently to understand and enjoy the spiritual life. Such an one, if he had given more time and thought to spiritual things during his earth life, could have immediately claimed his spiritual treasures, which would have been carefully stored up for him until such time as he had need of them, and he would have been helped and his new life made much easier and pleasanter by the possession of these riches. As it is, he has to make his way, in a spiritual sense, in much the same way as a penniless wayfarer, on arriving in a new locality, must set about earning his daily bread in the material world. Everyone knows what a handicap the lack of capital is in your world. Well, exactly the same thing applies here. Folks arriving here in the spiritually destitute condition before mentioned have just as hard, if not a harder, struggle to make their way in the spiritual life as anyone who is left without means on earth. People placed in the latter condition may and very often do receive financial help from friends and relatives, or societies which deal with that sort of thing, but there are no charitable institutions here. That is to say, no spirit ever gets something for nothing, or without effort on his part. Though we older spirits can and do help newcomers, we cannot give them spiritual riches. We can only show them how they may acquire them for themselves. Another spirit says, if newly arrived spirits have a desire to learn how to make a spiritual living, so to speak, we can instruct them, so that in time they will become independent and will know how to set about the task of amassing wealth of a spiritual nature for themselves. Such wealth is not easily acquired, even here, but it is possible for any and every spirit to become possessed of it in time, if he only desires it sufficiently and is willing to work hard to get it. This may sound as if selfishness were encouraged here, but that is not so. Spirits can become possessed of the wealth here spoken of only by loving and unselfish conduct toward others. They must learn to work gladly and without thought of reward before they can hope to enjoy the fruits of their labors. There must be literally a labor of love, and when self is utterly forgotten in a desire to help others, great and satisfying will be their reward. No goal on earth is, or ever can be, so well worth striving after. For, after all, though it is difficult to make humanity realize it fully, the things of the soul are so much more worthwhile, and infinitely more lasting, than any earthly joys and pleasures can possibly be. So little thought has been given to the necessity of gathering spiritual wealth to enrich us beyond this physical life, so little thought has also been given to means and method, that the question may fairly be asked, how is it done? To answer so important a question requires a little thought and some reasoning, for it is only through the avenue of reason we comprehend the intangible. Every physical act has a physical result, every cause its legitimate effect. Advancing the spark to meet the gas, we have combustion, and the energy released is expressed in motion visible and tangible. We lay one brick upon another, embedded in plaster or cement, and we build a wall. Everyone endeavors to have a home of his own, all the result of effort, every fine spiritual act and thought changes the etheric condition about the individual. Every thought has color and is expressed in shade. Nature abhors stagnation. Every hour we are improving or impoverishing our very selves, one cannot stand still. But how can individual acts enrich us in the afterlife, you ask again? There is not one law for the spirit world and another for the physical. There is one law for both blend and are really one. Simply the one is to our present eyes invisible, and the other visible, because of the different vibrations or modes of motion. Dissolution simply changes the plane of action. We illustrate, to help another with kindly words and suggestion, to give where hunger stalks, brings joy and happiness to giver and beneficiary. Giving of material wealth is no more important than words of encouragement and tender sympathy. The peace and comfort produced by such acts are reflected, and enrich us not only here but hereafter. Charity enriches the donor more than those to whom it is given. It has been well said that the only wealth one carries into the great beyond is that he gives away here, and it will be remembered that in the next life, where money is no more, the only way one can enrich himself is by helping others. It is well to have a good start by commencing here, for the only genuine happiness we gain now is by helping others to better their condition. We are building character every day, and, on the threshold of the afterlife, stripped of all material wealth, we face the endless future, either rich in generous acts or paupers in a world of plenty. If mankind understood these conditions, there would be more fair dealing, less selfishness, a happier world, a richer world, a better world, and as we go one by one, we should meet the new life with the wealth of generous acts and thoughts and deeds. Thoughts are things, and every act and thought functions around and about us in that substance called ether, sometimes called the aura. That substance, woven of the warp and woof of an act and thought, envelops us now and ever will, invisible to us now but ever visible to all in the life that follows. With this in mind, let us pause for a moment and seriously consider what kind of an etheric garment we are weaving day by day, and how our spirits will appear as we approach the frontiers of the afterlife. Will we go with the consciousness of a life well spent, rich with generous acts and kindly deeds, and, radiant with the soul's emanations, meet the outstretched hands and proudly reply to the words and songs of welcome? Or shall we approach this goal with soul shriveled by selfishness, lust and greed, from which no light of generous acts pierces the gloom? I have talked with many who have gone out into darkness of their own creation, poor and alone, and long have they sought for the light that ultimately comes to all that live. Chapter 2: Child Life Beyond. During my many years of scientific investigation, I invited many men and women to witness my work, and, among them found a few possessing the psychic force that could be utilized by spirit people in sending messages. I recall that Mrs. S. was told one night that her young daughter, 12 years of age, could do automatic writing if properly instructed. The trial was made. The child sat in an upholstered chair, with pencil and paper, which she magnetized by passing her hand over it for a moment, and then apparently she slept. It was a complete trance condition. After a few trials, her hand would write with great rapidity, and in that manner a conversation could be carried on with spirit people with great satisfaction. In this manner many evidential facts were obtained. There never was the slightest doubt that spirit people controlled her hand. I have had similar experiences with several others, and there is not a particle of doubt in my mind, and in the minds of others who have witnessed such work, of the genuineness of automatic writing. I wish to mention Mrs. H., a lady of rare refinement and great spirituality. I aided her development in automatic writing. She is today the most wonderful writer that I know, absolutely reliable. I make this statement after receiving hundreds of messages through her hand. With her, it is spirit suggestion. She gets the messages by dictation, knowing at the moment the word she is writing, but not the communication as a whole until it is read afterwards. This is a most satisfactory method, second only to the direct or independent voice such as I have obtained with the aid of Emily S. French. I mention Mrs. H. and her marvelous powers, for the reason that I am going to append a series of letters from a young boy in the spirit world, written automatically to his sorrowing mother still in earth life. I hope they will comfort thousands of other mothers who mourn for children who have gone from them. These letters were written from time to time in my presence and are authentic. First letter. Oh mommy, mommy, don't cry so. It makes me so unhappy, and I can't make you feel my arms around you. If you would only smile and be glad, I'd be quite happy, because, dear little mommy, I see ever so many lovely people who seem to be waiting to take me someplace. They are all smiling, and talking together as they wait for me to be ready to go to them. One just came to me, a darling little girl. She says she is my baby sister, you told me went to heaven. She has the loveliest face, it looks all shiny, as though there was a lamp inside her eyes. Mummy, she wants to take me home with her, but I just can't leave you. Second letter. Darling, I held you so tight last night, and it seems you must have felt me, for you smiled in your sleep and said my name. When I kissed you, because you seemed happier, I went with Marion to see our home. It is a darling cottage, and every room is so interesting. Grandma takes care of us and says the house is one she built while she lived with us. She says she did not know it at the time, but she was just as happy and good and did kind things for people, and each kind thing helped build the cottage. Some people do so much good, they have quite big houses, but they can't be any nicer than Grandma's. Hers is just filled with interesting things. She says she has lived in it and improved her mind. She said at first it was just warm and cozy, because she did not have an intellectual mind, but she has studied, and the rooms are filled with pretty things and books, and all sorts of things. When you are happier, I think I'll have a lovely time and learn a lot. Sister Marion's room is beautiful. She has lived there all her life, since a baby, and everything in her room is so beautiful and sweet. Third letter. Oh mummy dear, why do you grieve so? I'm well and could be happy. Only your sad face keeps me wanting to be near you and comfort you. I saw Marion do such an interesting thing today. She took me to a tumble-down hut, and let me look in while she went in. There was a man in there, moaning and crying. He kept saying, "It's so cold and dark, I can't see a thing." Over and over he said it. Marion just went to him and laid her hand on his eyes, which were closed. I could see that she was thinking, without her saying a word. It was very strange, yet seemed quite all right. Marion was thinking.